Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea in the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with all the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about it. A reminder to sign up for our weekly email that you can get through Substack at readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. And you'll get a write-up of our weekly class, along with all the links to the articles and books that I've discovered on my Shabbos reading journeys. Thank you so much to our friends and sponsors, Janet and Lior Hoden family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Moshe has already been told that he will not enter the land of Israel. He now stands in the final year of his life, and Moshe, along with the Jewish people, stand on the precipice of entering the land of Israel. The people will enter without their beloved leader, Moshe. Moshe, however, is not willing to accept his fate. He pleads to God, "Please let me cross the Jordan River and enter into the land of Israel." It is one of the most heartbreaking scenes in the entire Torah. An urgent prayer after fate has already been sealed. God even demands that Moshe stop praying. "Enough," God tells Moshe. "Never speak to me of this matter again." Instead, Moshe is allowed to see the land, even though he is forbidden from entering. Yehoshua is charged with actually entering the land of Israel with the Jewish people. If Moshe already knew he would not be able to enter the land of Israel, why did he insist on praying anyways? And what exactly is God's answer, "Please stop praying"? It doesn't seem like Moshe's prayer even accomplished much. What's the significance of recording these unanswered prayers in the Torah? To understand the significance of Moshe's prayers, let's explore the life and controversy surrounding Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, known by the acronym the Ramchal. Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, the Ramchal, contains multitudes. His memory is preserved in very different ways throughout Jewish history. For most within the traditional Jewish community, he is remembered as the author of Mesilas Yesharim, a classic work of Musar, traditional Jewish ethics, studied in Bate Midrashim, houses of Torah study throughout the world. In fact, the Ramchal cannot be pigeonholed into any discipline. He wrote poetry, mysticism, Musar, ethics, philosophy, logic. His work transcended any particular community. His legacy was embraced deeply by many of the leaders of Jewish enlightenment. The fact that his work, Mesilas Yesharim, has become so associated with the Musar movement and the traditional yeshiva world is almost comical, given that his original vision for the work was very anti-establishment. And, as we shall explore, his works and writings attracted a tremendous amount of controversy and criticism within his lifetime. In many ways, the Ramchal, as his memory is preserved today, was only created many years after his untimely passing at the age of 39 in the year 1747. The central controversy surrounding the Ramchal began on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, which corresponds to the date May 21st, 1727, when the Ramchal claimed that he was visited by a divine Magid, a spiritual guide of sorts. He recorded the following in his diary. "It occurred on May 21st, 1727, this is the Ramchal writing, as I was immersed in one yichud, some divine unification, I fell into a slumber, and upon awaking, I heard a voice saying, 'I am descending to reveal the hidden secrets of the Holy King.' For a short while, I stood trembling. Then I revived myself. The voice did not cease, but revealed a secret to me. The next day, at the same time, I tried to be alone in the room, and the voice returned with another secret, until it revealed to me that it was a Magid sent from heaven. He taught me private yichudim upon which to meditate in order to procure his presence. I could not see him, only his voice spoke through my mouth, and later he gave me permission to ask things of him. After 3 months, he gave me private tikkunim to perform each day in order to merit the revelation of Elijah. Then Elijah appeared and announced that Metatron, the grand minister of heaven, would appear. From that time, I recognized each one, although sometimes souls revealed themselves to me whose names I did not know." A mystical fraternity began to form around the Ramchal. As a young teenager, he had been a part of a mystical fraternity led by his teacher, Rav Yeshaya Mordechai Bassan, called Mevakshe Hashem, Seekers of God. Now that the Ramchal was privy to a divine Magid, many gathered around him, each member signing a Shtar Hiskashrus, a contract of unity. Rav Lotzato felt the Torah he disseminated within his mystical fraternity would help usher in the redemption. Far beyond just sharing the same first name, the Ramchal identified very deeply with the character of Moshe Rabbeinu. When he got married in August of 1731, mystical significance was attributed to his wife Tzipora, the very same name as the wife of the biblical Moshe. For the entertainment at the wedding, I love this, could we please bring this back? The entertainment at the wedding of the Ramchal, members of his fraternity performed a skit. What was the skit about? You guessed it, the apocalyptic war of Gog and Magog. How do we bring this back to weddings nowadays? We should have more apocalyptic shtick at contemporary weddings. His ksuba, the ksuba of the Ramchal, which is reproduced and translated by Isaiah Tishbe in his book Messianic Mysticism, Moses Chaim Lotzato and the Padua School, was deeply mystical and included allusions to a wedding between the Ramchal and the Shekhinah, the divine presence, so to speak. Ramchal's cosmic messianic ambitions did not ingratiate him to the rabbinic establishment. In fact, the Ramchal was openly critical of the rabbinic establishment, who he saw as prioritizing their own Torah studies over the redemption of the Shekhinah. He was critical of his own Rebbe, Rav Bassan, for abandoning the more mystical approach to Torah study. What pleasure can we give our creator, the Ramchal asked his Rebbe, with great pilpulim and many codes? Simply put, the Ramchal looked at most rabbis as simply not getting it. As Professor Elisheva Kalibach, whom I personally merited to study with, she was probably the greatest teacher I've ever had. She's really an incredible teacher. And she's written a lot about this. Most of the translations of the Ramchal's diary and writings comes from her article, Redemption and Persecution in the Eyes of Moses Chaim Lotzato and His Circle. And of course, we have a link to it in our weekly email, reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. You're going to want to sign up for that. We're almost done with the Torah, and you're going to want to have the links to all this stuff. So she writes in this article, I love this sentence, Lotzato stated his belief that the pedantic rabbis had become peripheral to the effort of securing redemption. I don't know why, but that sentence resonated with me a heck of a lot right now. I'm just going to read it one more time. Lotzato stated his belief that the pedantic rabbis had become peripheral to the effort of securing redemption. The antagonism escalated to outright contempt once a letter describing the activities of the Ramchal fell into the hands of the rabbinic establishment, the very leaders he was so openly critical of. The description of that Ramchal is otherworldly. This is what it writes. The angel revealed to him the secret of causing the academy on high to descend to him. It ordered him, with the approval of the Holy One, blessed be he, and the Shekhinah, to compose a book of splendor entitled Zohar Tinyana, a new Zohar for the great restoration which is known among us. At his command, Elijah appears immediately and reveals his secrets, as well as Metatron, Moshe, the faithful shepherd, grandfather Avraham, Rev Hamnuna the elder and the known elder, and often the king Messiah and Adam HaKadmon, the primordial Adam. They're all involved in this. He has already completed a work on Ecclesiastes, Koheles, marvelous indeed, and now he is commanded to compose 70 tikkunim on the verse and all the mighty arm, the last verse in the Torah. He has also composed 3 volumes on the Torah, all in the language of the Zohar. He knows the Gilgulim and Tikkunim of every soul. Nothing is hidden from him. No one knows of this except our group. Moses and Metatron have shown that many verses that have been expounded to apply to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, author of the Zohar, can apply to him as well. They, meaning Lotzato and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, are comparable in every respect, as has become apparent to all, and no one has merited this distinction since the time of Bar Yochai. When the contents of this letter fell into the hands of Rav Moshe Chagiz, one of the fiercest Sabbatian hunters in history, he was convinced that the Ramchal was under Sabbatian influences. The Ramchal almost welcomed the challenge. He was quite brazen when first learning of the rabbinic opposition, proclaiming that he was privy to divine illumination that made whatever rabbinic power his critics possessed just besides the point. At the heart of the rabbinic skepticism was the Ramchal's claims of receiving divine illumination, speaking directly with the divine spirit. What gave this clean-shaven poet mystic the right to present himself as a leader of the Jewish people? This is what they wrote, the rabbis against them. Are we to believe that the ancient sublime wisdom that has been hidden from all mankind has been restored through the Lord's illumination and influence? Or are we to assign him to the category of those who hold back the footsteps of the Messiah with their audacity? We will assume that all his actions and the ways are misguided, and we will deal harshly with him. In their eyes, the Ramchal seemed to be claiming nearly a prophetic revelation. How could he achieve such a lofty experience? And, as they pedantically pointed out, prophecy can only be achieved in the land of Israel, not in Italy. If it wasn't divine prophecy, they reasoned, perhaps it was more sinister associations. Rav Bassan hesitantly came to his student the Ramchal's defense. He knew the unique capacity of Rav Luzzatto ever since he was a teenager, and certainly Rav Bassan did not dismiss out of hand the possibility that the Ramchal did indeed merit some sort of divine revelation. Even outside of Israel, Rav Bassan noted, there is precedent for such divine experiences. This is what Rav Bassan writes. Daniel was not considered a prophet because he lived in Babylonia, yet his visions were accepted by tradition. Elijah appeared to the Amorite Rebbanan and taught him Seder Eliyahu Rabbah and Seder Eliyahu Zuta. He appeared in the yeshivot of the Gaonim as well. The Hasidim of Provence, Rav Avraham ibn David, the Ravid, and his disciples also claim to have had visitations from Elijah on alien soil. Rav Yosef Cairo received his first Magidic revelation in Nicopolis. Am I pronouncing that right? Probably not. And Rav Menachem Azaria Fano, the Ramami Pano, received it in this very city, in Padua. The author of Megala Amukos, Rabbi Nussan Nutta Shapira, lived in Krakow when the Spirit of the Lord appeared to him, and the Arizal was in Egypt when he received his call to the inner sanctum. Thus, the possibility existed in every time and place. Privately, in correspondence directly with the Ramchal, Rav Bassan was more concerned about his mystical activities. What differentiates you, Rav Bassan asked his student, from Nathan of Gaza, the prophet of Shabtai Tzvi? How are rabbis supposed to know the difference? You too seem awfully alike. The Ramchal was frustrated. Even his Rebbe didn't seem to fully understand his work. All classical Kabbalah must deal with messianism, the Ramchal responded to his Rebbe, Rav Bassan. It begins with the sin of Adam and then looks towards the restoration, the Messiah. Rav Chagiz was just not convinced. Even if the Ramchal did in fact experience divine inspiration, such innovations were inherently dangerous for the Jewish community, especially in the wake of Sabbateanism, which continued to have clandestine influences within the Jewish community. On July 17th, 1730, rabbinic leaders demanded that the Ramchal sign an oath disavowing the earlier teachings he heard from the Magid and promised to stop sharing such ideas in the future. The entire ordeal pained the Ramchal greatly. He decided to leave his hometown of Padua and move to Amsterdam near his brother. Once in Amsterdam, the Ramchal reassumed his mystical activities with added fervor. He disregarded the oath he was forced to sign. The rabbinic establishment, in the eyes of Ramchal, simply did not understand what he was trying to accomplish. The image of Moshe continued to recur in the Ramchal's teachings and self-conception. Just as Moshe had to flee to Midian, so did the Ramchal. And just as Moshe received his mandate to redeem the Jewish people while Moshe was in exile, so too, once again, was it so in the life of the Ramchal. In 1740, the Ramchal published his work, Mesilas Yesharim, a classic work of Musar that continues to be studied today in yeshiva throughout the world. The broad acceptance of Mesilas Yesharim helped neutralize the controversies that brewed during the Ramchal's lifetime. The fact that it is seen as a classic work of Musar rather than an anti-establishment polemic advocating for a more individualistic approach to Jewish piety may be the greatest accomplishment of the Ramchal. As David Sklar argues in his incredible dissertation, Like Iron to Magnet, Moses Chaim Luzzatto's Quest for Providence, the original manuscript of Mesillas Yesharim, which was structured as a dialogue, is far more critical of the rabbinic establishment than the beloved work studied in yeshivos today. Sklar explains, Luzzatto's vision emphasized the individual's relationship with God and respect for all facets of society, and he argued that members of the rabbinic elite were required to serve God by uplifting their surroundings and community with palpable spirituality. The book's most biting and overt critiques of the rabbinate were excised from the printed edition. Still, a careful read of Mesillas Yesharim still betrays its iconoclastic goals. My Rebbe, Rav Yisrael Kamenetsky, who first introduced me to the work Mesillas Yesharim in ninth grade, I still have very vivid memories of that. He would always start the day teaching Gemara. We learned the first parak of Beitza, but he would always start first by learning a little bit of Mesillas Yesharim. And he would always say, the greatest chiddush of Mesillas Yesharim is in its final paragraph. There, at the very end of the 26th chapter of the book, there are 26 chapters in the book, same as the numerical value of the Shem Havaya, Yud Kei Vav Kei. And in that last chapter, the very end, the Ramchal insists that true religious piety can be apprehended by anyone, regardless of their profession, status, or station in life. The Ramchal writes in the closing of Mesillas Yesharim, I'll read it in Hebrew and then I'll translate, V'zeh pashut ki kol adam lefiya umnus asher biyado v'ha'esek asher hu osek, kach tzarech lo ha'yeshara v'hadracha, ki derech ha'chasidus haro'i l'misha toraso umnaso, eino derech ha'chasidus haro'i l'misha tzarech lahaskir atzmo l'meleches chaveru, v'lo zeh v'zeh derech ha'chasidus haro'i l'misha osek bischoraso, V'chein kol shar ha'pratim asher be'iskei ha'adam ba'olam, kol echad ve'echad, l'fi mashehu ru'uyim lo darkei ha'chasidus, lo l'fi sha'chasidus mishtana, ki hine, hu shove l'chol nefesh vadai, ho'ol ve'einenu ela lasos ma sheyesh nachas ruach liyotz rabo. V'zeh pashut, it is evident, it is obvious that each individual needs correction and guidance according to his particular trade and occupation. For the way of piety appropriate for one whose occupation is full-time Torah study is not the way of piety for one who needs to hire himself out to work for his fellow, nor are the ways of piety appropriate for one occupied in business. Similarly, for all other various affairs of human beings in the world, each person, according to who he is, will be the ways of piety suitable for him. This is not because piety varies, for it is certainly equal for everyone, since piety is nothing more than doing what is pleasing to one's maker. Rav Eliezer Katzman, who's a consultant and appraiser of rare Jewish books, fascinating individual, wrote an overview of the life of Rav Nosson Nata Shapiro, the Megala Amukos. He lived from 1585 to 1633, that elaborates on the influence of his mystical works on the thought of the Ramchal. Interestingly, he notes that a poem that was appended to the work Megala Amukos was actually incorrectly attributed to the Ramchal, when in fact it was written by the son of the Megala Amukos. The Ramchal looked towards Rev Shapiro, the Megala Amukos, as a model for someone who had achieved divine revelation even in exile. As mentioned, when the Ramchal was being persecuted for his claims, Rev Bassan specifically invoked the legacy of the Megala Amukos as a defense for his student. On the grave of Rev Shapiro, it is written that it is said about him that he spoke to Eliyahu the prophet face to face. If the Megala Amukos experienced such divine revelations in exile, what is to say the Ramchal did not do so as well? And this is what's written on the Matseva of the Megala Amukos, Rav Nosson Nata Shapiro. It says, Ish Eloki Kadosh Min HaKadmonim Megala Amukos V'Rozin Umadmonim. He revealed these deep secrets. And then it says, Hu She'omrim Allah, that it is said about him, She'diber Ito Eliyahu Panim El Panim, that he spoke directly with Elijah the prophet. In 1743, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, the Ramchal, left Amsterdam for the land of Israel. He died there 3 years later in 1746 from a cholera outbreak at the age of 39. On his gravestone is the verse, Li'eshuascha Kivisi Hashem. For your salvation I await, O Lord. And this brings us back to our Parsha. Rav Nosson Nata Shapiro's work, Megala Amukos, is a collection of 252 mystical interpretations of Moshe's prayer, Va'aschanan, Moshe's petitions to enter the land of Israel. The entire work is just mystical interpretations of what was Moshe's prayer about. The number 252 is derived from the numerical value of God's response, Rav Lach, which if you count up the numbers, equals to 252. And that's when God demands that Moshe stop praying. Why spend so much time interpreting a prayer that was not fulfilled? In a sense, the underlying purpose of all of Moshe's prayers is embodied from the very life and legacy of the Megala Amukos and his influence on the Ramchal. Moshe wanted to show the Jewish people that even in exile, even on the other side of the border from the Promised Land, even when you don't receive the life you so desperately pray for, still, connecting to the divine is still possible. Even in exile, even without revealed prophecy, we can still experience divine revelation. And perhaps this is why this parsha is always read the week of Shabbos Nachamu. The Shabbos that follows Tisha B'Av is always called Shabbos Nachamu, the Shabbos of comfort, and the parsha of Va'aschanan is always read. What is the comfort to be found in the story where Moshe's prayer is not answered? The comfort, however, is even the possibility of prayer within exile. Rav Yonason Eibschitz actually asks, very beautiful, in his work, Avas Yonason, he asks, what is the need for the prophet to comfort the Jewish people, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, if we already have been redeemed from exile? If we've already been taken out, then what's the comfort that's still needed? And he answers, the comfort of Nachamu, Nachamu Ami is not for the time of redemption, Rav Yonason Eibschitz explains, but for our pains in exile. Our distance from God in exile does not mean we cannot discover divine presence. Even on the other side of a closed door, we can continue to speak to one another. So thank you again for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get the links to all the articles and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly email, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. Thank you again to our friends and sponsors, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Thank you all so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos.